through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
As Jake was saying, quote, "It's Monday! Start your day right."
That's right.
With Jake and Stacy and Curtis. We're all here talking about, not the greatest Mariners game that we've ever seen. Potentially the longest first inning I've ever sat through, but some great conversation to come from it. For instance, the Mariners have a big decision to make, and it is not just one about pitching. We're going to be talking about that in 10 seconds. Also, to let you guys know, we're going to have Mike Salk on today, Aaron Goldsmith on with us at noon, and just recently seeing the news, thank you, Curtis, for letting us know, that John and Pete finally going to be speaking to the media. This, by the way, and it doesn't feel like it because normally we would have had the combine and a pre-draft presser.
Yep.
The first time they are speaking to the media since the end of the season.
It feels like, for the
on
first
Wednesday.
Like
they have
hunkered down in the VMAC or wherever they stay at in the off season, and they have hunkered down, stayed away from the public eye, haven't talked to anybody, and now we get to hear from them for the first time this entire off season. I'm pretty excited about that.
I can't wait to ask John and Pete some of the most important questions they're going to be getting, right? With all the stuff that's happened, a question like, what do you think of the Circle Season 2?
Oh my gosh.
What have you guys been eating this off season? Still doing plant-based? Are you keto?
Well, that's really important for Pete because
really
he was all
questions.
In on that.
I know. That's exactly right. Now, let's get back to this Mariners conversation.
You know how this is going to go, right? Like the first thing that's going to come out of somebody's mouth is going to be about the whole Russell situation and the Russell Wilson situation, and then I'm going to be very curious to see how they approach that. Do they address it? Do they laugh it off and then try to avoid it and go to the draft? I'm going to be curious about this one because they've had a lot of time to marinate on this, to really think about it, to, they haven't commented on it publicly with any public statement. How is their approach going to be about it? And I think everybody's going to be very curious about that on Wednesday.
I think there'll be some smooth operators. I think that is one thing. Give John and Pete credit. I think both of them are very adept at how to talk their way through something and kind of out of it in a very charming way. Scholars in that sense. This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Let's get back to the Mariners. The Mariners have a big decision to make, you guys. It's not just one about pitching. So this is a bigger conversation that stemmed from us watching this game the other day with Margavicius going through just one third of an inning, walking, I think, four. And it was just an awful outing. So the Mariners continuing to go with presumably the six-man rotation. Now maybe they'll bring up LJ Newsome. Maybe DePoto will make a move. Who knows? But questions about whether they bring up Logan Gilbert, and for the record, I don't think they should, bring up a different question, which is, when does this team, Jake, prioritize competing and wins over solely development?
Yeah, and you have to, first off, I want to give a shout-out to them for splitting with the Red Sox away. In Fenway Park. I thought that was huge. I thought that was big for them. And they'll have another couple of big series coming up against the Houston Astros and then against the Angels as well. And I'll be very curious to see how they do against the Astros, knowing that they're going to be back at full strength, the Houston Astros are, with their lineup and with their superstars. But when it comes to the Mariners and it comes to that question, Stacy, it is big because the reason why we're at this point is because of how well they've started. And because of, it's not just how well they've started, it's the feeling, it's the eye test tells you that things look different, right? The bullpen is significantly improved. The starting pitching is starting to come around outside of the performance that we saw yesterday and the difficult position that the bullpen had to be in coming in early into that game. But outside of that, I mean, they've been performing relatively better. And the top and the beginning part of this lineup for the Mariners has been performing exceptionally well. Ty France, you've got Haniger. Mitch Haniger, Seager comes in every now and then and has a game. I mean, so this is one of those things where I think you're getting to a point where now that you see Margavicius lose his ability to maintain his arm health, right? It was already in question heading into the start. Now you're in a point where your six-man rotation really kind of looks flawed at this point. I was all on board heading into the season, Stacy, but now I think that you have really two simple questions. Six-man rotation was with development, was with the idea that you're going to have development, and also you're going to give guys rest. Guys like Paxton, guys like Kikuchi, coming off of a only 60-game season, you're able to really kind of develop everybody's arms to where they feel comfortable moving in that direction the following season. But now you're getting to a point where your six-man rotation is really weakened. And can you compete at a high level with that type of rotation? I don't know. I you might get to the point where you might be looking at one day of that six-man rotation or 2 days of that rotation saying, I think that we've got a loss here today. And that's a bad way to go.
Now, let's backtrack just one sec to just catch you up on that injury information. So, cut number one, here's what the skipper, Scott Servais, had to say about Mark Avishus.
Yeah, it's not the way we were hoping to get that one started today. Certainly, in one of those games, Mark just didn't have a whole lot, and just an update on him. Yeah, he, after getting looked at a doctor here, there's some shoulder fatigue going on, and he's going to get an MRI, you know, over in Houston tomorrow. So, he certainly didn't have it right out of the chute.
Now let's assume that Mark Avishus goes on, makes a short IL stint. The Mariners have a couple decisions to make. One, you keep your six-man rotation and you bring up LJ Newsom in his place, or just your best bullpen arm that can be a longer reliever, and maybe you want to keep Kendall Graveman in there. So LJ Newsom seems like the popular choice for people. Two, you make a move to acquire someone. Three, you bring up Logan Gilbert. Four, you go to a five-man rotation.
Yeah, I think today should be the day where it marks the end of the six-man rotation. I believe that it's time to move to the five-man rotation. If this is if these are the decisions and the things that you're dealing with at this point in time, I don't think the benefits outweigh the bad here. And I think the question that you originally stated, at what point do you decide to focus on winning, I think is a good one, because at this point, there's going to be a point in time where you're going to have to send some of these young pups like Justice Sheffield and Justin Dunn and say, hey, it's time to grow up.
It's time to go.
And I know Kikuchi in his history has been used to a six-man rotation, but we're talking about your third year in Major League Baseball. You've had 7 years professionally overseas, internationally. It's go time. You're getting paid $18 million. Marco Gonzalez is the only one that I feel like at this point in time in that lineup is just totally ready for it and would totally own it. But, I mean, Curtis, you had a stat for us today that I wanted you to get out there, because it's important. When you put it in this type of context, I think it swayed my decision in terms of a six-man rotation over a five-man rotation.
Well, yeah, if you split a 162-game schedule over six starters rather than five, that's 27 starts per starter, which means that's 27 games you're not giving the ball to somebody at the top of your rotation, rather than, you know, somebody who is probably a starter at best, most likely a long reliever. So that's 27 games that aren't going to be pitched by Marco Gonzalez or Justice Sheffield, somebody like that, rather than, you know, LJ Newsom and Nick Markavichus. That, to me, that's not good, especially with how great the Mariners have played, or at least how great their record has been to start the season.
And my question here is, you're compromising, so with that stat, there's no doubt you're compromising wins for the sake of development. I'm all good with that, but who are you developing? Who in the long term are you developing in terms of that starting rotation? Justice Sheffield?
Yes.
Justin Dunn, you're still trying to get him figured out.
Yep.
And then who else? Because
Flexen,
he's on a 2-year deal. He's not on a 5-year deal. He's not a part of your long term. And you brought him in because you felt like he was one of the most ready to go arms out there in the free agent market. Marco Gonzalez, are you still developing him?
I think in the case of Marco, it wouldn't be development. It would be trying to keep him as fresh as possible, would be my thought. But you're right. You're not developing Marco right now. It's for those younger guys. And I would say for Logan to not bring him up earlier than you think you need. So buying him more time in the minors. But you're right. I mean, it's a really good point, Jake, to say, like, hey, you have had, and basically what Jerry DePoto had to say. This is from January, cut number three. This is what he originally had to say about the six-man rotation.
We loved it. And, you know, it was a choice we made, like you said, partly to battle the schedule and the fact that our players were coming back after multiple starts and stops. So our first thought was for player safety purposes. Could we build a safer environment by not asking our pitchers, our starters, to throw as often, or, as we've talked about, ramp it up too quickly? So we brought them along slowly. Their first couple of starts were very limited in how many innings or pitches we were willing to let them throw. And yeah, as a result, we were able to keep our starters healthy.
He also said via a separate interview, it's still very much a development program. We feel like that's a huge advantage for a young staff. And it is, but you make a really good point. At what point do you, and it can be with different phases of your game, at what point do you decide that you are going to lean into competition as opposed to development?
Well, and the other part of it too is, are you okay accepting the fact that you're basically going to be giving up a day, right? I mean, you're going to have LJ Newsom in there. You're going to be trying to make it work. Basically, you are going to be putting the bullpen out there for a start.
Yeah,
that's what you're doing. And are we okay with that moving forward? And if Jerry DePoto and Scott Service, they feel like it is what they have to do to get the best out of this starting pitching and for the remainder of the year, and it's what they have to do in order to keep everybody healthy and ready to go for the following season, like, I guess I could get on board with it, but it's going to be extremely hard to watch for me because I think that a five-man rotation just would make a lot more sense given the circumstances. I get having a plan. I get, you know, wanting to see that plan through, but I think that their plan hasn't gone accordingly, exactly to the T of how they've wanted it to go, and it leaves them in a pretty compromising situation, I guess you could say, with their starting pitching. I think there's an easy fix to that.
Yeah, I mean, the easy fix would be, for instance, I'm assuming you're saying easy fix is just go to five-man rotation. Just make those fifth games count, right? Use a guy that you would start on any other day as opposed to a guy you start to give other people rest or time developing. I agree with you. Like, I definitely would not mind seeing a five-man rotation at this point. They are at that really interesting in-between spot because Curtis was pointing this out. We'll get back to this later. The stats that they have at bat don't necessarily back up their record. They're 23rd in average, 24th in on base percentage. They're averaging just 4.41 runs per game. They're 11th in drawing walks, which is actually like pretty decent, but 18th in slugging, 22nd in OPS. Those are the fourth and sixth worst in the AL respectively. That said, you also can't deny their record. They're not just a scrappy group. They're also a group that's never out of it. They're a group that at times performs really well, right? Like, there are areas, Kyle Seager with RBIs, for instance, where he is in the top, near the top of the AL. So there's enough there to tempt you and to make you feel like, oh, maybe you put your foot on the gas now. And it's going to make 2021 one of the more fascinating years for what Jerry DePoto and Scott Service are trying to do. Because that day that they decide, or that time that they decide to transition and to move forward, is presumably going to happen at some point this year. And that was always going to be the plan, but you feel like you're creeping in on it. And you feel like, oh, when's it going to be? Is it going to be early when you feel like you can still, you know, make a play in your division? Is it going to be later when you bring up Kelnick and Gilbert? It makes 2021... It's parts of it are going to be so frustrating as Mariners fans, and parts of it are going to be fascinating trying to figure out how they move forward. We're going to keep this conversation going with Mike Salk when he joins us at 11:30. Right now, though, it is time for Three Questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
Question number one, 49ers said to be deciding between Mac Jones and Trey Lance. That's according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. So of those two quarterbacks at pick number three, who should Seahawks fans be most concerned with?
The guy that I'm more concerned with is Trey Lance, and Justin Fields for that matter, because I still think that he's in play in this conversation as well. Mac Jones is a guy that I think if the 49ers are looking at this and they select Mac Jones, they think he's the most NFL-ready starter day one. So the whole conversation about Jimmy G and is he going to be around and is he going to be the starter with the 49ers? Not if Mac Jones is the guy. I just truly believe that they think that he could be a day one starter mentally, physically. He operates the system the way that they want him to. Whereas Trey Lance is a major wild card.
Mm-hmm.
He's a major wild card. He's unbelievably talented, and I think that he has an incredibly high ceiling, and he would be the guy that I would be taking in this pick.
Yeah, it's like the deal or no deal thing. Mac Jones is like the $2,000 thing where you're like, okay, like he can be serviceable, but I'm not too afraid of him. It's not who you really want if you're the 40. Well, I'm sure it's who you really want if you're the 49ers, but there's potential that like he's not incredibly threatening. Trey Lance, North Dakota State, you didn't see a ton of him. So there's a chance that he's just a bust, that there's all of this interest and intrigue around him and it ends up not panning out because we didn't have enough information and in reality, it wasn't really the best fit. Or he could be phenomenal. Really,
right.
You've seen flashes of both and you really don't know. He intrigues me more personally. Mm-hmm. Like I wouldn't mind him being in the NFC West out of a personal like who I would most be interested in watching. I think, though, it's clear they're leaning Mac Jones.
You think so?
Number two.
I don't know. Maybe they're game planning it all. Here's the thing. Like, sorry to interrupt, Curtis. No way do you make this trade if you aren't pretty certain who you're going to take.
You know who you want. You definitely know who you want, or at least you're fearful of the guy that you think you want isn't going to be around for you later. He doesn't even make it out of the top five, top six.
What if the 49ers like use all the time on their clock, still haven't decided?
Or
and you see all these teams rushing their picks in at number three? Oh, I'd love that.
Can you imagine if they take Kyle Pitts? They're like, yeah, we went tight end.
Kittle and Pitts?
No!
You'd hate to see
but
it.
But with Jimmy G. It's
sure.
Who will get injured after game four.
Okay.
So CJ Beathard then.
Yeah.
Question two. Fernando Tatis Jr. destroying baseballs in the city of Los Angeles this weekend. Five home runs against the Dodgers in three games. Is he the face of baseball? And if not, then who is?
Nobody else. It is Fernando Tatis. I mean, you could maybe make an argument for a couple other guys like Mike Trout, but Tatis has taken this over. With his personality, the way that he plays the game, he's an elite-level talent that everybody wants to watch because they want to see what he's going to do next. And that is when you know you have a star. That is when you know you have someone that is incredibly marketable. And you're taking this lowly San Diego Padres. I say that with a smirk because they are paying a ton of money right now across their roster. They've got all sorts of talent. But you've got Tatis taking on the Dodgers and completely owning them over the weekend. I mean, that was some fun baseball to watch. And to watch him play and the rivalry that was there, I mean, that's when baseball can truly be at its best.
I will say Oakland has since surpassed the Padres in the power rankings, MLB power rankings from MLB.com, which I think is completely fair with that win streak that they were on. But it doesn't make the Padres less of a threat because they're still there at number three. And yeah, I think Tatis is the face of baseball right now. I mean, I go over when you listen to Baseball Tonight, who's always talked about? Tatis is talked about on like every single time. When you go to the MLB account, who is always being made into GIFs and memes and constantly leading that conversation? It's him. He's a fascinating player. He engages. He joins in that conversation. He pokes fun at himself or trash talks other people. It's fantastic. There is no one I'd rather have right now.
He's doing pretty well for himself despite not playing on the East Coast.
Yeah, in a tiny, tiny market.
Question three.
Number three.
Guys, we're in month four of the Pac-12 commissioner search, and some pretty ominous quotes made over the weekend from John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News, who covers the Pac-12. I want to know what your guys' concern level with that search is right now. Month four.
I would say pretty high. Pretty high. Now, the reason why, and Curtis, we went through this story, and all the quotes and everything that was in that Mercury News article was basically a non-answer. We don't know what we want. We don't know exactly the direction that we're going to go in. Maybe we'll do this. Maybe we'll do that. And I am incredibly fearful of the Pac-12 messing this up. right? I mean, they've got an incredible chance in front of them to turn around, steer the ship around, and get themselves back on track. The confidence level that I have in the presidents and the chancellors and the big decision makers in this conference, it's waning right now. I don't feel good about it, and it's an awful place to be, because if they mess this up, I think the damage that they could do to this conference could be irreparable. I mean, it's one thing to go through a stretch of, you know, 10 years or so. It's another thing to go through 20, 30 years. That's tough to come out of.
Yeah, and I think that when Larry Scott was ousted, we all assumed that meant that all of his ideas and his plan was rejected.
Right.
And I think John Wilner's latest column makes it clear that that may not be the case.
Yeah, they might still be using his media strategy.
And that's in part what
Please
fans
no.
hated so much. Right?
Yes.
So,
I mean,
yeah.
you if you're a lot of fans, you couldn't even get the Pac-12 channel. How's that beneficial?
I would love for the Pac-12 to stop being like a snake and eating its tail and just eating itself. It would be fantastic.
That'd be great. That'd be great. I mean, use the momentum that was there when it comes to the NCAA men's basketball tournament. I mean, that is what you want to see this conference do. You want to see them be successful. You want to see them competing at a high level with all the best teams across the country.
All right. What do you guys need to see before you start feeling restless and want to press play on competing over development for the Mariners? Plus, what would you be most interested in hearing from John and Pete when they speak to reporters on Wednesday? We're going to ask those questions to Mike Salk. He joins us next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now is Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Stacy. How are you guys?
I am well. You know what? I gave you such a hard time on Friday for saying that your arm hurt after getting your your first vaccine dose, and I actually am here to apologize and say that I was complaining all day on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, payback's a you-know-what.
It is.
I'm glad to see that you're suffering there with me.
Thank you.
I am now, almost a week after dose two, and feeling golden, no side effects.
All right.
I'm a week and a half away from being 100% there, so I'm psyched.
Okay, well, I have some questions about, we found out this morning that John and Pete would be speaking with reporters on Wednesday. Now, they always do a pre-draft press conference, but obviously this offseason has been different, much like last year, in that we also never got a chance to speak to either of them in the interim. Normally they'd be at like the owners' meetings or the combine and you get a little press conference then. Nope, we got nothing. What would you most want to hear from them? What are you most interested in hearing from them when they finally speak on Wednesday at noon?
Yeah, a couple things jump out. I mean, one is, what the heck's going on with Jamal Adams? Like, where are we at? Is this going to get done? Like, they spent an unbelievable amount of capital on him. He has a request that I think is in some ways reasonable, right, that he wants to be paid for the sacks that he gets, not just for playing safety. But also, sorry, bud, that's just not really the way the NFL works. So how are they going to resolve that? Because as we get ready for this draft here in a couple of days, the reason the Seahawks are kind of an also-ran, a non-entity in this draft, is primarily because of him. So what's going on? That's one. And two, you know, the more we can hear about how this thing finally got resolved with Russell Wilson, the better. Did Pete talk to him? What was that like? How were they able to come to an agreement that what they're doing moving forward, regardless of what it is, that they're on the same page with it? Because I think that's really, more than anything, isn't that what we care about? Throw the ball, run the ball, whatever. As long as Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson feel like they are in the same boat together, I feel like they can kind of handle anything.
Yeah, and I would agree with you on that, Salk, and I'm going to be curious to see how they handle it. I mean, they are great with the media, and they do a great job. But I'll be curious to see their approach. And what would you like their approach to be? If you could write it up in a perfect world in a script for Pete and John when they get that question, what would it be in your mind?
Well, first of all, Pete's got to be the one to answer that. John has a level of honesty that probably doesn't suit anybody to go after a sensitive conversation like that. And I say that with great love for John. Pete, I don't have a good answer for you, Jake, other than my experience with Pete is that he will use a phrase that we'll remember for a while. I don't know what that phrase will be, but he seems to have a way with words and language where he has crafted a phrase, right, that
yes,
we will look back on and say, okay, well, that's whatever that means to Pete, and we'll spend the next couple of weeks trying to figure out exactly what that phrase means, try to remember it into training camp, and then come back to it over the course of the next year or so of his relationship with Russ, because Pete seems to have his own unique language when it comes to these things.
Yeah, like Chris Carson and his style. He's just got that style about him.
He's got a style
right?
about him.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. He's great with those
sometimes
things.
Sometimes you know what he's talking about, sometimes you don't.
Salk, wanted to transition this to Mariners because they split series with the Red Sox at Fenway Park. There was a lot to like. There was some things that obviously stand out. And one of the things that we talked about at the top of the show was where do you go from here in terms of your pitching rotation? Do you stick with the six-man rotation now that you've dealt with some injuries? Do you transition to this to a five-man rotation? Where do you think that this situation is at or where it should head?
Well, in talking to folks, and Shannon, I think, will tell you the same thing. It sounds like they are committed to the six-man rotation. Mm-hmm. So regardless of how I feel about that, and by the way, I sound old, but I remember watching a four-man rotation, so five seemed about fine. The idea of going to six still feels a little crazy to me, but okay, fine. That seems to be the direction they're going. I would at this point probably go to five, but if they believe that the development on six is more important, fine, okay.
But Saul, can I ask you a question on that? The development.
Yeah.
Who are you developing on that starting rotation? Like, who really needs that extra development? Is it $18 million, you know, Kikuchi? Is it two guys, Sheffield and Dunn? That's the part
I'm done.
Okay, so
I think if you look at it, and Sarah, Jake, I think the way they look at it, I'll sort of argue against myself here and try to take their point of view. They want Marco Gonzalez to limit his innings so that maybe he can be part of the future of this team. Say, and then you mentioned the two guys, obviously the two young guys in Sheffield and Dunn. So, and then once you eventually get Gilbert and potentially Hancock in here, I think they want to make sure that those guys eliminate as much stress as they can early in their career in order to have them for as long as possible. So that's the thinking, regardless of how I feel about it. Okay, fine. I think they now actually, I would actually like to see them go out and acquire something. And mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you've got to go spend a lot. Certainly you're not going to give up any of your major assets in order to get a pitcher. But DePoto has done a good job in the past of finding guys with pitchability, right? They don't have to be all-stars, but you need somebody else to fill out this rotation because you're just down too many people. And when you look at what they have, what's his name, Robert Duggar and stuff in the alternate. So, I mean, that's just not enough. So go out and find one more and move on. This is why you can never have enough pitching. This is why even good teams at the deadline – who are stacked with pitching, find somebody else because the next thing you know, you find yourself in need. And if you don't have a good enough starting pitcher, you just can't compete.
It's a great point, Mike. I think I'd also rather see them go out and acquire someone just to also not mess up with the bullpen, which has, weirdly enough, been a really good thing for you this year. Hey, last question for me here. This is the earliest I can remember, outside of that 13-2 start, but the earliest I can remember Mariners fans having conversations about how excited they are to win and, you know, keeping track of your division and watching all that stuff. And it's really exciting, right? I know that there are people that will say, hey, you know, not to rain on your parade, but it's way too early. At the same time, I think it's also a great sign in Jerry and Scott's move in their plan that fans this early in the year are talking about winning. It's pretty cool to see. I'm curious about what you think. Like, when do you think you'll start kind of feeling that itch, kind of start feeling a little bit restless about when they're going to start prioritizing winning?
I guess what I would say, Stacey, is on the first part of that question, I'm okay with both. I'm okay with watching them win and enjoying it and knowing at the same time there may be a trap door that they'll fall into at some point. That doesn't bother me as I'm looking at the long plan. That being said, they are winning games. They are doing it in a somewhat sustainable way. I don't think they're you know, some of what they're doing is sustainable. And I think they will hit better than they've hit thus far. I think their bullpen will probably come back to earth, and maybe those things balance each other out over the course of the season. So you know, I think you're a month or so away from a real conversation about where you're at. We're almost in May. I think by the time you get to June, then you start to say, all right, where are we? Who is this team? What is, you know, how much are they worth investing? Not for us as fans, because there's no reason not to watch and have fun watching and investing in them for us. But at what point does Jerry DePoto say, hey, maybe I need to subsidize what I've got going here? And I hope that if they do that, it's not necessarily with prospect assets. But you can start taking on salary. They've said that they're going to do that long term. John Stanton committed to that. You can start that now before the deadline. You don't have to wait. So you kind of wait and see. Are you going to be trading Kyle Seager? Where are you going to be at with Mitch Haniger? Those two names will be important to balance on the other side what you might be looking to do in terms of adding to your club.
He is Mike Salk. Thanks so much for joining us, Mike. Pretty beautiful day outside. Yeah. Enjoy the rest of it.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Now, as a reminder, we're going to be having Aaron Goldsmith joining us at noon. Before we get to any of that, though, I want to jump back into the conversation, the question that Jake brought up about when this team is going to bring up some of its prospects, specifically Logan Gilbert, a conversation that's going to be had all week, and a question service will most certainly be asked a couple times. That coming up next. Chaos in the studio. I feel like a changed person having learned that thing about the NFLPA, by the way, that they'll compile like highlight videos for you. And I've decided, and I know that all of you listening would do this too, if you were in the NFL for a single snap, I would ask for a 10-minute highlight video. It would just be different angles, different songs, slow-mo, not slow-mo.
Well, I don't know if they would do that for you. I think
they
just
would.
Take the play.
I think that snap, if that snap impacted the game
but
forever.
But sure, yeah, sure. I mean, I would definitely do that too.
Thank you,
yeah.
Thank you.
I'm right there with you.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Question, is it time to bring up Logan Gilbert? Now, before even going into it, the answer to me is no. But the question's important because it leans toward the Mariners' timeline, that development. Not only are people excited about seeing one of their top prospects, Logan Gilbert, and the next pitcher that they're going to have making his debut, but it's also about the decision they have to make right now about the rotation. So backtrack, take a step back before you answer, Jake. Cut number four, here's what DePoto had to say about the plan for Logan Gilbert.
We built an inning model for him this year where we would slowly ramp him up, roughly starting in late April, early May, with the hope that we were going to be able to preserve as many of his innings as possible for him to throw at the end of the season. You know, he's actually never pitched through a full calendar baseball season, and we want to see that happen. And we believe it's going to finish with him pitching a large majority of those innings at the big league level. And what we're trying to do is make sure that we get him through, using the six-man rotation that we're using, get him through the end of this season, having pitched a complete year. And I feel like that will have been a win for us developmentally.
That final sentence is the key of that. The plan for Logan Gilbert, who I'm still trying to figure out a nickname for to shorten. I'm working on it. Right now I'm at Logo Baggins, but I'm not happy about it.
Yeah. That's,
Logo Gabbins?
Neither are we.
No.
Logo, whatever.
No,
I'm workshopping it. The plan for Logan Gilbert.
You workshop it heavily before you come back.
The plan for Logan Gilbert has been, through the use of the six-man rotation, to have him go through September. That's the plan. Whenever that debut happens, get him through September.
Right, and it's... To me, it's fascinating that you end up deciding to go with the six-man rotation in plans of what's happening in September, right? Part of it is the group that you have now and some of that, but to me, the whole six-man rotation screamed Logan Gilbert, that this was an easy way to get Logan Gilbert to the big league level and to make it more manageable for him in his first year at the big league level. But, you know, Stacey, you know, Jerry DePoto, they've got their plan and all that, but... You know, here in cut number five, back in March, you know, Logan Gilbert kind of had a different view.
I'm always going to say I'm ready. You know, I'm confident, feel like I can go out there and play my best, regardless of who's in the batter's box. But I can't really worry about that too much. I'm just going to go out and try to prove what I can do and leave it up to them.
You know, Gilbert taking the right approach here, confidence-wise, feeling like he can go out there now, but knows that, hey, you can only control what you can control. But this is where... Stacey, this soundbite here was the part that had me a little bit confused in terms of where exactly Gilbert was in the timeline, because my initial response or reaction was, was the same as a lot of people's when they saw what happened yesterday, and you see your starting pitcher go out in the first inning, and now you're really, really in a hole from your original plan with who was going to be a part of your starting rotation and who's going to fill that sixth spot. I thought, hey, maybe Gilbert might be able to come up and be ready to go because of cut number six here, Scott Service, back in March, talking about how confident he was in Gilbert.
Oh, he's pretty close. Certainly last year did him no favors in the fact that he wasn't able to pitch in competitive games. So he is close. He probably, like all of our young guys, they continue to need a little seasoning. But, you know, super, super high ceiling for this kid, and love the way he goes about his business and what his future holds. And he's going to be a big part of our rotation here for a long, long time. So the fact that he didn't throw any innings last year, we need to be very cautious. As we've talked with him, it's really important how he ends the season, in my opinion. So hopefully he's got some gas in the tank, you know, when we get into August and September. And knowing that ahead of time, we have to be careful on how much workload we put on him early in the season.
Now, that part of it, to me, was the thing that as you progress through camp and through March, people talked about, hey, Logan Gilbert, this is kind of the original plan, September, mm-hmm. August. And then you start getting through spring training and everybody's going, man, Gilbert looks good. Gilbert, the talk about Gilbert was pretty, pretty positive. And that, you know, hey, he might be more developmentally ready to go to get to the big league level before Jared Kelnick. And I think that when this conversation first came up, the conversation was very firmly hit the gas or hit the brake on that conversation, because we're not even going to touch Logan Gilbert until August. And I think that part, to me, I'm okay with. Mm-hmm. The question remains with Logan Gilbert. Are you not bringing him up for the developmental plan, which I think Foley is, or are you in a spot where you just don't want to you don't want to bring him up too soon? You're nervous to do that in terms of this developmental process, and the whole regard of baseball is you're always going to be nervous with prospects. Are you bringing them up too soon?
Yeah, I think it's a good point. Like, the idea is, like, it's as good as someone's going to be at the minors. I agree with you. I don't think he should be brought up. I think now is way too early, but I agree. Eventually you have to decide, and managers know this, GMs know this, that when you bring someone up, you're going to see a little bit of regression, right? Like, if you're dominating at the minor leagues, you're going to mess up when you're facing major leaguers, especially when you're facing off against some of the best hitters in the league right now. When you're facing off, hypothetically, if they were to face off against Bogarts and Martinez, or if they were to go face the Astros, or facing Corey Seager and a healthy Mookie Betts with the Dodgers or whatever. Like,
right.
You are facing some tough groups, and so you're going to regress.
I do think that there are multiple benefits of the six-man rotation, but ultimately, in my mind, and I think this is an incredible amount of commitment that they have for Logan Gilbert in his plan. When they originally rolled this out this year and said that they were going to go to that, I felt that that was with Logan Gilbert in mind, that this was the easiest and best way to get him to the big league level. And yeah, there's other positives to it. Development for the guys that are on the starting rotation now, rest days for guys like Kikuchi and Paxton. And I think that overall, if you're going to stick to the six-man rotation, I think it has more to do with their desire to keep that six-man rotation for Gilbert in the long term, mm-hmm. than it does with anything that's going on currently right now. Because mm-hmm. you can't tell me that the six-man rotation is better than a five-man rotation with the current group that they have, unless they go out and acquire somebody. You're basically wasting your sixth day from that perspective. You're taking one less arm from the bullpen as of right now. And so I think that they are very committed to that six-man rotation plan so that Logan Gilbert can be with the Mariners in the big league club at the end of it.
That's a good point. We have like 10 seconds left, so I'm just going to tell you guys nicknames that listeners have submitted for Logan Gilbert. Someone saying Logan Gilbert looks like the new big unit because he's 6'6".
But you can't call him the big unit.
Well,
you
I'm just saying what? It's fine to recycle. Logo Gadget is someone sent in. Now, L. Gibby or Gibby. I don't like the nickname Gibby. It sounds like a man, like it sounds like he has webbed fingers.
Well, that's not even his last name. If his last name is Gibson, that'd be fine. But
how
Gilbert.
How
Gilby.
You're going to tell me, Texter, to my face, that Gibby is better than Logo Gabbins.
I'm just telling you that I'm sorry. I appreciate you guys playing the game and sending in suggestions and trying to help out Stacy, but all of this is bad. All of you guys need to rework all of it. Not good.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners open a four-game series on the road against the Houston Astros tonight. You know, I thought it was Marco, but it is Justice Sheffield, correct, getting the start? And that is around the diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Aaron Goldsmith joins us next.